Today I'm talking to a former media professional who transitioned into a successful businesswoman when she founded and launched The Perfect Hair in 2015, a brand driven by her own frustration over the lack of suitable local hair products, especially for women of color. The Perfect Hair is celebrating 10 years this year, a huge achievement considering what it takes to stay relevant in this ever-changing industry. So, Taryn Gill, how are you today?
I am good. I'm feeling springy. Thank God, spring has arrived.
It is, and I'm feeling
so good. Yes, thank you so much for having me. I remember Wanted as a young media professional, Wanted coming onto the scene, and I just feel very honored to be speaking under this brand.
I'm really happy to have you here. Okay, I'm going to start with just looking back a little bit. When you look back at The Perfect Hair, what has surprised you the most about just the evolution since 2015, if there has been any? It's been a decade and so much is different. I'm just wondering, when you look back, what would you say for you were some of the biggest surprises?
You know, I think one of the biggest surprises for me on the consumer landscape was how liberated she is now. I think when we got started, we were deep in the trenches in 2014, 2015. We weren't just building a range, but we were educating the consumer on very tactile things like, what is a cow wash? They called it cow ash back in the day. So
they called it what?
Cow ash. That is a fact. So we were a little bit ahead of the curve in 2014, 2015. Yeah. We were following a lot of trends in the States. YouTube was a big influencer in terms of how the consumer saw herself. And there was almost a militant approach to natural beauty,
natural hair.
We were fighters.
We were very militant.
We were the warriors on the front line, man. We weren't going down without, you know, it was a beautiful movement. And it was a movement that was all about self-love. This consumer really owning her own beauty, the hair as it grew out of her head naturally, her skin, moving away from colorism and just loving herself. I had a lecturer at Gibbs who said, you're not selling hair products, you're selling self-love. And I think the biggest surprise I've had, I'm now 10, 11 years into it, and the liberation of this consumer to feel that she can wear her hair as she likes, that she can play with different styles, that natural beauty can mean very different things to her, that she can be completely into her holistic health and, like me, still be standing and ordering Zinger Wings at KFC on a Friday night because we feel like it. So there's a certain liberation to the consumer where she's not as dogged as she used to be. She's also allowing herself a lot more space to exhibit and play with her beauty and her consumer choices. And I think that liberation was surprising, but so good.
That is so interesting you say that, because I don't know if you've noticed, online currently, we are seeing a lot of conversations about natural hair fatigue. Mm-hmm. Have you come across this?
I have.
Where a lot of women who are vlogging and blogging about natural hair are feeling overwhelmed. They feel like this is too much work and they've gone back to relaxers. Some are wearing wigs or weaves. And I'm wondering, why do you think that for some of us, natural hair feels like a lot of work? And for others of us, it just feels like liberation and it doesn't feel like a lot of work at all. What is that? And where do you sit on that?
It's a mindset. It's how you ingest what's going on around you. I mean, for me, natural hair was always my go-to point. Like we were saying, my parents were nightclub owners. My mother was incredibly against any kind of conformity. The girls in my hood would be straightening and relaxing a hell of a lot, and she wore her afro. So I wore my afro because I felt I could. Mum was doing it. She gave me license and space to love my natural hair. So for me, the natural hair movement, I felt I'd come home.
Yeah.
And then for a lot of women, it felt like such hard work, but they were fighting to defend what they felt was their natural beauty. So they jumped in. Sure. And now, more than a decade later, there is a fatigue. And the way I see it is we're framing it in the sense of this woman is feeling liberated enough to flip
between how she wears her hair, to flip between her styles. I mean, we know as we get older, your hair changes, your skin changes, your body shape changes, the way you dress, the way you feel you want to please someone or actually not want to please anyone at all but yourself. All liberating. So when I look at the consumer in the aisle, I try to really kind of align myself with her and say, well, is perfect hair going to walk with her and change with her? Is she going to need things in the range that are going to be more friendly to heat styles? Because she's not scared to blow wave anymore. She's happy to play up between a let's blow it out or let's wear it natural. So for me, I think the fatigue is natural and she should absolutely embrace doing different things. I mean, I've been playing with color and texturizers and shapes and styles and I'm a natural hair founder. So for me to be dabbling in all kinds of things is very indicative of what's going on in the category.
Okay. I like what you're saying there. I too grew up kind of looking at my mother as, you know, your first beauty icon and the person that you just kind of want to look like.
First female.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I wonder, because I have a 10-year-old girl and she's obsessed with length. She wants to flick it. If we're doing braids, they must be very long. The length thing is a thing. But what you're saying with your mom having always worn her hair naturally and as a young girl, for you, that just became natural for you to love your own hair, in that state. I'm wondering what happens now to our little girls if mom is just not feeling, if she finds her natural hair exhausting and overwhelming, and does that message then also, I mean, are we Definitely. Concerned about that? How do we manage all of that?
You know, there's still such a real dialogue, spoken or not, in our communities. You try rocking up at a funeral or wedding with your afro, you will still get pushback from the older woman in the community saying, go home and fix yourself. You can't come in looking like that. You know, that's very real. So those elements are still impacting how the consumer behaves. But now you have social media, you have a huge amount of global references coming into your phone every day. Mm-hmm. And those global references are giving you license. They're giving you license to play. So I think the consumer now is more liberated than she's ever been, from the age of the tweens who make decisions based on on their mother's credit cards, all the way up to women in their 50s. So for us, we can see on Perfect Hair and another range I built and designed for Dis-Chem called Curls in Bloom. It's very much a brown and a black skinned woman of color sitting between the ages of about 18 and 55, 18 and 50 actually. Mm-hmm. And they're very much based between Cape Town and its surrounding areas, followed by Joburg and Durban. Mm-hmm. We know what she's facing from a social pressure. We know what she's facing from the woman elders who she's definitely being influenced by, but she's got so much more.
Yeah.
The world is her oyster. And some of the biggest global trends will come to South Africa faster and faster, predominantly from the States. And that's, I think, another reason why for me, my evolution from hair care to the healthcare aisle in a supermarket was so natural, because that's where she is. I was just following her. I was following what she was doing, what I was doing. I am my shopper. What we were doing in the hair care aisle, and how we were starting to crawl over to the health aisle and looking for very similar things, looking for products that made us feel good, looking for products that kind of aligned with where we wanted to be. We want to be beautiful. In the natural hair care aisle, you want to be beautiful. You want to be really smack hot beautiful. And when you walk into the holistic health or healthcare aisle, you want to feel good. Those are very, very crucial feelings that you have to kind of consider when she's shopping.
And you have spoken before about, you know, beauty being more than just about products. It's very much a feeling. It's a very emotional thing.
Yeah.
I often feel, especially in the recent years, I often feel like the beauty industry has now become more about profits from women's insecurities. It's become this competition and this vanity project. Rather than building confidence or really making anybody feel beautiful, mm-hmm. very few of us walk away feeling beautiful from these spaces anymore. And I don't know, maybe it's always been like that. I'm not sure. Where does the perfect hair position itself in this conversation, especially as you enter this second decade?
So we started, and I mean, that's another thing that was really surprising, was considering where we started and where we've ended up in our decade of trading. Mm. We started in quite a purist fashion. We were packaged in glass jars. It was very, it was very full of heritage, and it was full of, it was almost custodian-like in the way we were making the products, you know. We wanted to illustrate a very much a call to natural. And right now, we are in 600 stores nationwide, and we have modified our packing in order to fit the supply chain that demands more versatile carrying and handling. But one thing that we didn't do was we didn't compromise on the core elements of the product has got to be as natural as she needs it to be. The product has got to have the efficacy that she needs it to have without compromising its natural roots. So if it says antifrizz, it must do that without compromising its natural roots. So perfect hair's evolution into something that was more mainstream without losing its promise to its ambassadors, its promise to that family of women who supported it back when I was just a Facebook page. So what is surprising is how big we got. And that was essentially, it was a lot of key decisions that I didn't ever think I would make. It was, selling the bulk of the business rights to a local distributor, because I realized you do not walk these paths alone. You know, yes. that for most of my customers, for most of my peers, they said, no, you can't do that. And I said, watch me. It will happen, because in order for evolution to take place in such a bulshy, hard, very rough retail landscape, you have to be able to navigate scale with brands who are already active in that space, you know, and you need the right partners.
Oh, wow.
You definitely need the right partners. So with Perfect Hair, we had the perfect product, and then we needed the perfect footprint.
Yes.
And actually, it was a survival strategy at first. And what we can see now, where we've lost a lot of our compatriots along the way, where we are now sitting on a shelf with multi-global brands that are trading everywhere in the world, and guys, we are side by side.
You guys have premium space in those shelves. You don't.
It did not come to play. Yes, it has exceptional.
That's what it took. It took that partnership with that.
Yes. It's very Rayhana.
That's very bold of you, and very admirable as well, because a lot of entrepreneurs, especially founders, become very attached.
They won't let go.
And they won't let go, and they won't give up a little bit of control.
So that was really one of the biggest surprises to our competitors, to our team. But it was at first a survival tactic, and it happened literally 3 months before COVID struck. So it was literally in the first year a survival tactic. And in the 4 or 5 years that followed, we are now in the fourth year of our partnership with the local distributor. And it's been a real success story to watch the product grow and compete with national footprint that offered us scale. I mean, I used to always say people would laugh at this or not ever take it maybe seriously. I'd go back and speak at my high school, or I'd speak at a Women's Day event or a lunch or some kind of, you know, I do a lot of studying at Gibbs, and we'd always have these women sessions where entrepreneurs can speak to each other. And I'd say, I want Perfect Hair to be a household name one day. And there was no ways I could do that by hanging on to 100% ownership.
Yeah.
Of a very small, very local, proudly South African brand. If you want scale means impact, which is ultimately what everybody wants for their brand. You want impact.
Absolutely.
You cannot do that on your
own. Otherwise, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Wow. That's, so it's been working well. You guys work well together.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone on to do more brands together. So I'm really happy about what we've built in Dis-Chem. That's growing. This year took me by surprise because now I've got two products that trade in Dis-Chem, and it encourages me to do a third and a fourth. So we had to pivot and understand that the business model wasn't about making one product line the destination. It was about being able to roll different products into different aisles as destinations and global brands. Look, global brands, like I said, it was a big thing for me to say 10 years ago that I wanted Perfect Hair to be a household name. But it's achievable if you have the right scaling partner. And I think we want to go and do that in the healthcare aisle now. And very much the same thing. You can't talk to 3% of the population who's earning mega bucks and, you know, nobody wants to niche. If you want scale and you want impact, niche is not where you're at. You want to be able to be in every store. You want to be able to be interfacing with consumers who earn 4,000 rand a month and 400,000 rand a month. And to do that, you need to be deeply entrenched and understand your middle market. The middle markets are how African countries survive and thrive. And you got to know her really well.
Oh, wow. And you got to have a really good product, which you've clearly mastered.
You just got to know her. And I think that's the thing is big brands don't know her.
Mm.
I won't say my competitors' names, but that would be, that would be non-polite. But big brands tend to lose sight of who she is.
That is across. That's just across the entire beauty industry. Yeah. I've noticed how all the brands sound the same, look the same, promise the same thing, running for, and I'm kind of like in that whole process that we are losing all track of who the brand is. Like we don't even know which brand is which.
Because they all look,
they all look and sound the same.
Same.
Because the same strategy, but they also don't know who they're talking to. It's just kind of like, what is my competitor doing? And then jumping in head first. You are now going into well-being, the wellness industry. What inspired this move? How does it connect with your journey with the Perfect Hair? And just explain to me what this new business is, because it sounds very exciting.
Wellness is such a trend now. I've had three options in the last 3 months of people saying, can I buy in? I said, but you don't even know what you're buying into yet. But it's so sexy now. Mm-hmm. But apart from just being on trend or maybe just slightly a bit behind the trend, the evolution of natural hair care brands or natural beauty brands into something that's in the wellness aisle felt natural. It felt like an easy progression, because at first we started to speak about what beauty from within meaning to this customer. We know this customer likes to go home and she'll have my shampoo and conditioner on the shelf, but she'll still be blending castor oil with coconut, throwing in mint essential vibes. She's very much involved in how she wants to treat her body from the outside and from the inside. So if you think about how she's playing with my products at home, how she's playing with her grandmother's recipes on what's good for her gut, or how she's kind of slowly starting to evolve her eating patterns to be something that's more about fuel, not just pleasure. So it was natural. I was doing it in my own life personally. And I realized that as I was kind of blogging about these different steps I was taking, little healthy habit stacks that I was making, have a cold shower, jump in the sauna, don't be afraid of swimming in cold water, eat for fuel, chow the protein, don't be afraid of creatine, Shilajit is good for you, trust me. All these little healthy habit stacks were so sparking so much joy in consumers who are watching me online going, why is she blending pineapple and chili for breakfast? You know, so I realized it wasn't just me who was taking this beauty from within approach, because you can't just treat healthy hair with what you put on your hair.
Yeah.
You're going to be eating products that are very full of protein and biotin and zinc and iron and the beauty from within element led to, well, what can we give her to bolster her beauty routine? And then we thought, well, why stop there? Because it's not just about her feeling pretty. She wants to feel strong. My consumer's definitely in her era of empowerment, and she wants to feel as strong as she can. Not for aesthetics. You'll find women who start running, and there's a lot of them. Massive trend. Everybody's running. I live in Rosebank. There are running clubs coming up.
I heard it's like a secret dating club. It is
a dating club. Hooking up will happen. But but running, while addictive to some people, it's, you don't run often for the aesthetic of it. You don't run because you look pretty at the end of it. You run because it makes you feel.
It's good. Always fascinated me why, when we think beauty industry or when we think beauty, people just think of the face. Oh. People talk about the face, or they'll talk about the hair. That's how it always was. And thank goodness for this big trend now of inside beauty and everybody, I mean, inside out beauty and everybody moving towards the well-being and wellness spaces, because now we are thinking about it in terms of our entire bodies, but also energy, aura, everything, like just everything about you and not just what your face looks like. Gosh, the faces.
I think as consumers, we've left shallow behind.
Mm-hmm.
We're very much into, and being conscious is a nice big word for saying, we know, we get it. You don't have to make us understand why being strong is important. We feel it. We feel good when we are strong, and we feel good when we look after all the parts of us, when we are spiritually aligned, and when we are loved the right way, and when we put good things in our body, and we put good products on our skin, and when we hold people and
communities, we have good relationships. Yes.
When we hold each other, we feel good. Once you feel good, once you do all of these things for beyond aesthetic purposes, where it's not about pretty, it's about feeling good.
Yeah.
You will not stop.
Yeah.
That becomes a lifestyle. That becomes a way of living. It becomes how you be in the world. And that's a fire. That consumer's on fire. She'll follow me to the healthcare aisle because she knows that I know what she wants, and what she wants is to feel good.
So what is Wellthy, your new venture? Wellthy?
It literally is the importance of being healthy to get wealthy.
Uh-huh.
But it's beyond money. I think the consumer understands that she'll take less money if she's going to be wealthy in all the aspects of her life, not just cash. Yeah. So knowing that this consumer is at that point, getting fit, getting strong, getting healthy is very much about the feeling good. So being wealthy is a brand that we want people to experience from Wellthy coaching, Wellthy retreats, wellness experiences, and of course a range of products that she can ingest that just kind of align with what she's doing. Because what we can see is a healthcare aisle that is almost like that child who grew up too quickly, is too full, is too busy. Nobody really knows what's going on in there.
No, we don't.
When you stand in there, even for us as people in the media space, writing and delving into the nitty-gritty of what health and beauty means in South Africa, we don't even know what's going on in that aisle half the
time.
No,
we don't. Because again, the brands can't even communicate it properly.
They
literally
can't.
Everyone is just repeating the same words. And you're like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing there?
Right.
And it's an aisle that just took off too fast, grew up too quickly. The child who got given the keys to the car way too soon. And
yes.
And now, you know, I think the aisle is ready for something that just can intrinsically speak to what she wants.
Right.
How does she take products into her life that just make it simpler to be stronger? And whether that's a well-designed lunchbox, whether that is a smart water that puts all of your electrolytes and your medicinal mushrooms in a dissolvable water product that you can drink in the taxi on the way to work, or it's in a tea bag because you've been drinking tea when you get to work for the last 30 years. So we're not going to change the system for you. We'll just give it to you in a tea bag. It just has to be a set of products that will be able to be incorporated very easily into her life.
I love that because the wellness industry has been accused of, I mean, it's very trendy right now, as you said, but, and it has exploded, especially in South Africa. I thought it would take a little bit longer for us to all jump on this bandwagon, but it didn't take long at all. And, and the industry globally has been accused and criticized of being a little bit elitist, a little bit inaccessible.
Yes.
And, I wonder how you are thinking about making your offering more inclusive, because that's who you are. And I love the examples you've just given me now, because that kind of tells me that you are thinking about this.
I'm definitely thinking about it. And what we were going to do was we were going to do the retail products first. And then we thought, no, from what I've learned in the beauty aisle is start with what she needs. And in order to do that, you have to talk to her. So we are starting with different coaching platforms, whether you're in corporate or you want to come in and have one-to-one coaching. So we're starting with Wealthy Coaching, Wealthy Experiences. We're starting to sponsor wellness events so we can get down there and actually just do what we did. I was market lady for my hair care brands for 4 years. I'd put on Nike slides and go stand in a marketplace and just talk to consumers for 3 days straight at shows. And I don't know, there'd be people selling bacon rolls next to me, but if she was there, I had to be there. So we are in that phase of Wealthy, and we can identify certain aisles. We know that it has to be a water-based product so that it's easy for her to take it in and share it with her children.
Nice.
Keep in mind, this woman, you will have her if you can give her something that she can multi-use in the house. She's okay if her husband steals a bit of it. She's okay if her children are using it. Her partner, her girlfriend, doesn't matter. Multi-use.
Right.
So it's got to be something
and like, safe for everybody.
Safe for everyone. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be something that she can ingest in the mornings. It's got to be something that's really handy, like toolboxes and lunch boxes that can go out and make her mornings easier. It's got to be something around, a supplement that's not a capsule. People don't like capsules, by the way. For the mass markets to make people put a capsule in their bodies denotes illness.
Wait, so, what do they want? Like a powder or
powder, tea, gummies, not a capsule.
Interesting.
So I'm staying away from capsules and we'll instead look at different types of smart foods that we can put out. Again, powders that you can put into soups and stews, food enhancers, like superfoods that you, if you're going to make a curry, I'll just give you a sachet of something to throw in that bounces the nutrient level right up. So, it has to be a simple range of, I'm going to touch you from morning till night in different touch points where we're just going to make your life very easy and design simple ways to get your wealthy in there. But first, the talking, coaching, experiences, retreats. And I think for the next 2 or 3 years, that's where we'll live is in the customer engagement space. Can be poor to live in the customer engagement space, but I think it's a part that the big brands don't do. They don't connect first, and we have to connect first. And then
absolutely.
You know, when I made my first co-wash, which ironically Elle magazine gave me the award for best cleanser, I think it was 2018 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, like I said, people would call it cow ash and wonder why I was asking them to put cow ash on their hair. but, you know, getting that award so early on, we made the formula 2 years before that. And we only took it to market 2 years later because we just spent an enormous amount of time sending out little glass jars to hundreds of women, asking them to tell us how they used it, what they liked, what they didn't like. We didn't just jump to the award. It took 2 years of trial. And that was, very informal.
And
trial.
Establishing a community.
And establishing a community. What did you like? What didn't you like? Did you put it on the kids' head? Did your husband steal it? What did he think of it? Oh, he's shaving with it now, by the way. Then you realize it's got a slip factor and now men want to shave with it because they don't get the ingrown hairs. Oh, look, there's a new demand, men. So we would never have known that men were shaving with their wives' co-wash unless we asked.
I do think like there's something about black and brown consumers when it comes to product, and we are not afraid to discover, to multi, to just find other to find other uses for this. It's never just one thing because we're creative. We're very creative in everything that we do. And I love that came through for you guys. It's going to happen with Wealthy as well. When you think about the next 10 years, which who thinks about the next 10 years after 2020? Really, nobody. But let's pretend you're thinking about that. When you think about the next 10 years, what is the impact you hope to leave behind, both with the perfect hair, but also now with Wealthy? When you look at these women and these families that you are talking to, what do you want to leave them with? What's that impact you really want to make and have stay there?
I was studying a program through Gibbs that was sponsored by JP Morgan and then the Sherry Blair Foundation. And the Sherry Blair Foundation actually asked the same question. And it took me a while to answer, but I realized the other night I walked into a club, my friend's club called Poppy's Cresta, and two young girls said, "Oh, are you the hair lady?" And I started blushing. I didn't know what to say. Then I thought, "Oh, I am the hair lady. Yes, I'm the hair lady. Lovely to meet you. Love your hair. Keep shopping." And it goes beyond being the hair lady. I think what really drives me and the people that I work with is we want to be able to leave a legacy that says it's possible, that says it's possible to know each other. It's possible to honor your community enough to be able to make things work for each other that matter.
Yeah.
And young girls need that message, and they need that message from women that look like them. That's a cheesy thing that a lot of people say, but it matters. It really does matter.
It's real. I mean,
it's so real.
Look at us and our mothers.
Look at us and our mothers. What our mothers were doing mattered to us. And I've recently started sponsoring a group of kids with big afros who are competing in robotics competitions globally now. They're all from Aldo's, Deep South.
Uh-huh.
My homies coming from Durban. I'm like, yes, kids, go. That matters. It matters that they see me as somebody who looks like them, sounds like them. I view their journeys as something that matters to them.
There's
an emotional connection. And if they can see products being made for them by people who look like them and come from them and sound like them, but people who are similar to them, that gives them the ability to think, yes, I can be good enough at robotics to go and compete in South America.
That's it.
I can do it. It's not a crazy thought. It's very much achievable. I'm going to be making lunchboxes in a year's time. Tell me you would have thought that of me 15 years ago.
No.
But here we are.
Wow.
You know,
okay, two last questions. Before we wrap up, I really love that answer. That emotional connection when it comes to brand, it's something we've lost with a lot of brands that we grew up with. A lot of them have just disappeared that we were attached to. The newer ones, there's no real, sincere connection there. So this is amazing. And also to get them young, because that's when the hook happens. And then that impact just follows them through. What is something you truly valued when you were starting out as a businesswoman, when you were a startup founder 10 years ago, that you don't so much care about today?
Something that I valued, what other people thought. Yeah, when I started out, I mean, you know, I came from a media background, and people thought I was a bit insane. Well, how could I suddenly be making hair care products?
I didn't.
I thought
it was brilliant. But yes, I remember the tie.
One minute I was, you know, doing a magazine for independent newspapers, and then the next thing I was stirring little pots of deep conditioner and wondering if it was strong enough for type 4 hair. And there was such a huge amount of fear of failure, fear of, we all have it, the imposter syndrome, fear like if I fail at this, it's going to be an enormous amount of heartbreak and shame. Mm-hmm. And wondering what my peers were thinking, mm-hmm. How How was this going to be perceived? Was I going to ever make enough money to be financially independent with these brands? Because the first few years were rough.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like even now, I'm starting to venture into little avenues where we can make Wealthy come to life as a brand you can touch and feel mm-hmm. and experience what wealthy habit stacking means, not by me telling you in a post, but by sitting on a beach with you and doing it with you. You know, that matters also, immersion.
Yeah.
So I just care less about whether or not there's going to be any scam, shame, embarrassment, failure. I know there's going to be failure.
It's the price. The price is embarrassment and failure.
I'll take it.
The scam is the price.
The scam is the price, but I'll take it. Yeah. I know I have to roll with it. And as I get older, you just care less.
You do. And something you didn't care for then that you absolutely value today?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think I was a rebel and I often would shy away from the pull that my community had sometimes. And as I got more, it's not just age. The deeper my products got into community, the deeper I got into building my own family. Before, I had a bit more of a reckless approach.
Right.
I didn't dial in to speak to my parents every day. I wasn't in the community hall giving back. I wasn't deep in community structures or I think there was a rebel element in me in my 20s and 30s that made me a bit of a renegade. And it was only deep into my product journeys that I realized how much I needed the community more than they needed me.
Hmm.
Yeah. And that was when I started turning everything around and becoming far more focused on holistic healing and going back to my roots in a very deep and traditional sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know this.
Mm-hmm.
I literally went back to my roots and rediscovered what community really meant for me, not just in my brands, but in my life. And it didn't matter to me in my 20s. In my 20s, I was just running, eating air, trying to take in all these sights and sounds and flavors and acquire things. You know, we were those emerging black diamonds that people used to write about in marketing presentations.
And yep.
Say,
every slide,
there was a black diamond on the slide. And I'd say, I'm not a diamond. And I don't know where you think we've emerged from because we've always been here. But it was that level of acquisition that I'm not chasing anymore. I need less. I need more of my community, of my people, of the right love. I'm much more spiritual than I've ever been. And I didn't need it then, but I need it now. And I need it not just for me to thrive, but for my business to thrive.
You are speaking to my heart. I mean, we talked about it a little bit before we started recording.
Mm.
Leaving Joburg for me and thinking it's going to be a year ended up being 5 years. That familiarity of being back home, hearing my home language, the sense of remembering, remembering even the little girl that I was and what mattered to me then, that I had completely forgotten, living in a very noisy environment with so much that you're being told to value. That you don't really value. But you even forget that you don't value it. And I love the name Wealthy and the way you've spelt it to show that it's beyond money. Because in those 5 years, I went away and lived with my children and just completely threw myself into the mothering role and being present and being in, you know, so immersed in their lives as well as bringing them into mine, but also doing all of this in nature. I also wasn't making money. You know, we were living off one paycheck at home, but I never felt more wealthy.
Yes.
I was full. I didn't need anything. I wasn't shopping, but that didn't even cross my mind. That kind of consumption never even really crossed my mind. I could take a drive to Hoxback, stay with friends with the kids for a whole weekend, and it felt like absolute heaven.
Yeah.
And such a privilege. And
absolutely,
I get it. And
yes.
Congratulations. I think it is a brilliant is going to be a brilliant venture.
Thank you. It's a communal journey. Hey, we're all on it.
I love it. Yeah. I think we're going to be doing some work together. I don't know what it is, but I just sense something here because I've been stuck for a long time in the scum, embarrassment, scared phase of things that I want to do. But I'm suddenly feeling very inspired again. Taryn, thank you so much for spending time with me and for being so open and talking to me. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me. And may we keep communal journeying together.
Absolutely.
I feel like we're all going to the same place.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.